Okay, Chris.
Oh, all right. Well, thank you, everybody, for who at least has been able to join us bearing through our technical difficulties here. But at least, like you said, Tracy, we'll get this recorded so people can access it. Appreciate everybody joining us here today. We are going to review the PFA that you guys probably have on hand here for Eric. I haven't really reviewed this PFA since my initial meeting back in November of 2012 with this client, and the reason I wanted to do that is just to be able to give you a fresh perspective of how I go about reviewing a PFA. I have some ideas what's in it, but it's been a while, so hopefully you've got the PFA in front of you. There's some things I've joined some of these calls in the past, and I think I do have some maybe a little bit different ways of reviewing it. However, probably more similarities than other people. So hopefully we can pull something out of this. And if you've got questions, don't hesitate. Stop me, and we can go through something if you see something or have questions. So when I review a PFA, obviously I've done some qualifying initially to make sure that they are qualified PFA. I'm of the mind of I'd rather have fewer stronger PFAs than a bunch of PFAs that I need to review that may not end up in deals. So the very first thing that I go to personally, I go to the sales. Usually page two. There's a lot of information, page two and page three of the assessment. That I'll go to. So I'll look at their sales. I've gone back and looked at my PFAs, and I know that on average, my buyer personally has, to be exact, a 6.2 as far as sales interest and a 6.6 as far as how they would rate themselves in sales. So I'm looking at that just because that's what my clients typically have. When I find that a client has very low sales, I don't get a lot of deals out of that. And that's actually why I pulled this PFA to review, because as you can see, he's rated himself as a 3 on both of those components in the PFA. So I thought, maybe this is a little interesting. Maybe I need to go back and review it a little myself. So, and one of the most critical things I find with deals that I've done, I went back and I pulled the last 30 deals that I've done, and I look at the last the last of those three numbers on page two, where it says, your sales ability, interest, and commitment to being in business in the next 6 months. My clients have, when I go back and I divided those 30 deals, I came up with 9.2. So this client here has a 10, even though he rates himself very low on sales, which was, kind of interesting for me because one of those obviously was off with him rating himself real low in sales, which tells me, we are probably looking at a deal where he's going to be doing a lot of marketing. So that was some of the first things that started popping into my mind. So liquidity and net worth are the kind of the third area where I would personally go to make sure that obviously they have the financial wherewithal. And what I'm looking to do here is just to back up what I've done in some of my initial qualifying. So I immediately jump to page three, and I look at what they say their cash investment level is. And with here, you've got Eric. He is selected 50 to 99. So, again, I'm just further qualifying him financially. So I'll jump to page four and looking at his overall financials. So one thing that was interesting, I actually sat down with this client and his wife before they took the PFA and had about an hour-long meeting and found out that they both have nice jobs. They're both making, I think she was making somewhere around $85,000. He was making, closer to $100,000. And some of the things, some of the numbers they told me initially seemed to be give me the impression that a net worth of $390,000 was a bit low. So I started to wonder, okay, well, if we're going to do a semi-absentee business, maybe where, because another thing in here is very few employees and maybe marketing. I'm looking at this as saying, okay, is there something missing in there? And there actually was. They weren't including some other IRAs that they had and 401Ks. So the net worth was kind of a little bit of a red flag for me. And I just, whenever I see something on a PFA that just seems a little bit off, I just write, dig more, because I'll use the PFA to walk through a client meeting with them as well. So just a review here real quick, sales experience, their commitment to being in business in the next 6 months, and the financial posture of the client are the first three areas that I'll cover. The next thing I cover is I really go into the behavioral aspects of the PFA. And I will use certain areas within the PFA more than others. I think every section of the PFA is very beneficial, but I found that there's certain parts that I will focus in on. It's just, you know, personally for me, it's a little bit more helpful. So the behavioral part is I'm really trying to dig into what kind of person do I have here. And I'm also looking for maybe some inconsistencies within the PFA to, you know, put together some notes for my meeting. So, you know, I trust the PFA. You know, they tend to predict how the process will play out with the client, in my opinion. What I mean by that is if I've got an achiever, you know, it's probably going to be a very fast process. I'm probably going to need to be pretty quick through my meeting and efficient. If I've got an emulator, I kind of look at time as my enemy with them. You know, they are obviously the kind of the knee-jerk reaction, very passionate, emotional decision sometimes. If I've got a belonger, you know, I'm a belonger. So I'm looking at probably a slow, methodical process here. And you know, a lot of times I'll structure the meeting and my questions, the amount of questions I have, you know, based on the primary behavioral factor in it. So if a belonger, I'm going to ask more questions and do more bonding and rapporting. If I've got a societal, you know, just if you look at those numbers, the metrics that are sent out in the weekly updates, you don't see a whole lot of deals getting done with buyers. And I know that, you know, basically going back and looking at mine, you know, the deals that I've done in the past, it's going to be a tough deal if I've got a societal, most likely. Not always. There's obviously exceptions. So I'll really dig into the behavioral part. You know, we can come back to the behavioral part and dig a little bit more. But after, you know, going into the behavioral part, that's when I start to focus in on the personal information. When I think the personal information on page one, you know, that top section that ends in, you know, annual income. So what do we got here? We've got Eric Donovan, you know, born in 1965, so, you know, now about 50, almost 50 years old, married, two kids, and I'm looking for things that are going to be, you know, somewhat game changers or very important. So you see he's a veteran here. So that's something I just take a highlighter to my to the assessment here, and I make some key notes. So I'm highlighting it. He's a veteran. I come down. Tracy, his wife's a consultant. She's got a good job, master's degree. A guy has invested in himself already, which is kind of, you know, stands out. And then I see that he's with Booz Allen Hamilton. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. There's a gentleman named Edward Stoughton who also worked for for this company. And I actually work with, you know, several people that are veterans and that have worked with this company. So I already know, just because of you know, the company he's working with, that when he checks in at 7 in the morning or 8 in the morning, that his cell phone goes in a carrier and they're not allowed to, or in a locker. And he's not able to have communication, so I'm going to probably have to set up an evening meeting with this guy, because they're so structured with that company. So he's got $96,000 that he's used to making. I don't know about you guys, but I always use that as a baseline of, you know, what my client is expecting to make at minimum. Obviously, they want to do better than that usually. So any questions up till right now? All right, hearing none, we'll move on here a little bit. So when I go through these next pages where they put, you know, just handwrite some information in for us, you know, this is where I'll start to really figure out and build that business model for them. and just highlight some key things that I need to either touch on deeper in the client meeting or as part of building their model. So, you know, when you get down to, you know, he never owned a business. He's just started looking 1 month in. And what has he looked at? He's looked at a clothing resale shop, and he's also looked at a Subway. I know from my conversation with him, he's also looked at a training program for kids. It's like golf instruction. Didn't put in there. And he's also looked at a resale of another franchise. So he's casting a broad net and tells me that, you know, he probably hasn't gotten real specific or doesn't have a certain passion, because these are all very different businesses. It's probably about, you know, the return on investment versus following that passion. And if you look at him, you know, the belonger emulator overall, that's probably more the emulator speaking than the belonger, is at least what I'm seeing in this so far. So what's attracted them to these businesses? Clothes Mentor, which I believe it's a resale shop. So he hasn't seen them in the area, which is something that we hear frequently from people. Oh, I know this certain spot. You see, he says particular location and the same answer as well. I see something in the area or not in the area, and I know a good spot. So that tells me that I need to get him on one of our webinars, or at least shoot him a recording of a webinar, because he's saying some of the things that we battle against every single day that are common misconceptions. I know this spot, or my friend Jimmy said that this would be a great business in our area, and he's smart. So I need to get him a little bit more educated before our meeting, which I always try to have them on a one of our webinars that we do live. If they can't do live, then I'll send them over a recording of one of our prior business ownership exploration webinars. So, and the reason I do that is because I don't do a ton of presentations. I do probably about one every 5 to 6 weeks for different groups. So, many of those are, maybe the veterans group groups that I'll do, or the outplacement centers. So I need to get this guy brought up to speed on some things and cover some of the misconceptions that he's already under, it looks like, just to make for a more productive meeting. So let me go down to the part where it says, how much time can you devote to working on the business? Part-time to full-time. Well, that doesn't help us a whole lot, because they're telling us that, he's either all in or he's a semi-absentee guy. So I just wrote dig deeper here as well, because there's some inconsistencies with something I saw on another page as we just flipped through it. So, and I got a highlighted section down there under please describe the most important things in choosing a business. So the long-term ability to replace my income, and I just wrote a little note to it, said, okay, that's one of the main goals here. A lot of times we see, okay, let me find something that I'm passionate about. No, he just wrote one thing, and that is the most important thing to him. So I find that when somebody just writes one single thing, the fewer words they use, the more determined they are. That's the primary, or maybe sometimes even the only goal. So obviously just focused in on the St. Louis area, not looking to relocate, which is good. Professional affiliations and hobbies. He's part of the Black Masters of Business Administration Association. That right there tells me something pretty important, because that's one of the groups that I will speak to annually. It tells me that this guy probably has an accountability partner, because I know how that group works. And it tells me that, he's out there and involved in the community as well, because they do a lot of community work around the St. Louis area. So, again, kind of like knowing the company he works for, I'll actually go out and research, not just LinkedIn. I connect with everybody on LinkedIn, but I'll look them up on Facebook as well and see if there's interest and try and just dig deeper, try and really understand who they are, what their interests are. So not trying to be a stalker or anything, but trying to just understand everybody. So other hobbies, golf, tennis, home improvements, likes to get in there and work with his hands a little bit. So he was referred to us through a local veterans group that we volunteer with. So Let's flip over to page 2 and kind of walk through some of the business characteristics here. You know, the first answer he gives there, a business or a situation where he was happiest. So he developed and implemented a plan to improve a client's certification compliance rating, and he did that 4 months ahead of schedule. So the guy likes efficiencies. You know, that's just a little note that I made there. You know, jump down to the sales ability, interest, and commitment. Those are, as I mentioned before, those are really three very important numbers for me, and I spend a lot of time analyzing these three numbers. So I want to know, you know, the guy, when I sat down and met with him, he was, you know, very easy to talk to, great communication skills. Why is he rating himself at a 3? So, you know, as I dug deeper one-on-one in the client meeting, you know, I said, why did you rate yourself at a 3? And he says he's really just not comfortable going out and doing cold calls. So he rates himself at a 3, but, you know, we work with enough people that we can see, you know, how well they are at sales skills. I would probably say he's, you know, more likely a 5 or 6 or 7. So he's not going to want to go out there and do a lot of cold calling and things like that, or even building referral partners. So the interest is also at a 3. You know, this is a guy that really wants people to come to him. He wants to put it out there and people respond to it. So that's telling me already that we're starting to look at retail businesses, most likely, that he's going to have some interest in. So the commitment to being in business in the next 6 months, you know, when you have somebody that rates themselves at a 10, you know, that tells me they're ready to go. They just need to find the right business. As I mentioned, my average is 9.2 for deals that I've closed. So when I see somebody that rates themselves a 7 or above, you know, I'm going to spend more time on them, and, you know, they're going to be the A clients for me, not the B or the C. So, but I do also need to validate that in the meeting and make sure. I always ask them, tell me why you put a 10 on there. Why is this so important to you? And let them sell you on the idea of, you know, why this is so important and I need to have a business in the next 6 months or so. So, you know, translate, let's go down to from sales ability and interest down to how are they going to go out and build a business. And I don't know about you guys, but I find that, you know, these three sections, you know, about ramping up a business, you know, being involved in the community or having a retail location, I find that clients, when they read these assessments and answer that, they get a yes or no, but I find that they're often confused. And, you know, when they say no on that middle section, almost, I'd say, 75% of the time, they actually say, well, yeah, that would be okay. But, you know, they're going to tell you exactly, you know, the retail location is the most comfortable. That shoe is going to be the easiest fit. But I find that they do misinterpret the way these things, maybe it's the way they're worded or you know, the way the assessment's flowing for them. But I find if you dig deeper, sometimes you can get them to say, oh, yeah, that's okay. I don't mind getting out there and attending networking events and building relationships for referrals. So, and that's what happened with this guy as well. You know, as we talked about the sales spectrum, which everybody, I think that everybody should get, you know, prior to a meeting and bring to the meeting and checked off things. You know, he had checked off things that directly related to that middle section where he had selected no, but he said he was okay with it on the sales spectrum. So, again, just kind of cross-referencing to make sure that that we're not missing something, because that obviously rules out a lot of businesses if we're only sticking to retail. So something else that I highlighted down towards the bottom that I thought was very important, you know, multiple units is an interest of his, and then initial involvement. He put owner-operator. Obviously, if we're going to focus on, you know, businesses, the guy's employed right now, so I really need to dig deeper. And as I dug deeper, I found out that the government contract that he was involved in was just about ready to expire, and they were waiting on renewal. So he could have been a full-time guy, but if he had the opportunity to land another job or land another contract, that's the route he was going to take, and the focus would be a semi-absentee business. So then the other thing that's obviously always extremely important would be, you know, is a spouse or family member going to be involved? And he said yes. So anytime I get that, I want to know how involved they are going to be, and get a PFA from the spouse as well. Even if they say they're only going to be involved in the business 10%, if they're going to take the time to fill out the PFA and come to the meeting, you know, we get some engagement and commitment from the spouse as well. So let's jump over to page 3. A few things I highlighted here. You know, almost everybody says proven, easily replicated system. Everybody wants that, and everybody wants significant growth. But not everybody says they want a recognized franchise brand. This guy did. And that directly correlated to, you know, he saw that as, you know, how much am I going to have to sell? If I don't have a recognized brand, then I'm going to really have to go out there and sell this thing to the community. So it was really important for him. And anytime somebody says they want a recognized franchise brand and indicate it's important to them, you know, that's always something I highlight. And I place a lot more emphasis on that than I do the significant growth or the replicated system, you know, or easily replicated system. So, again, you know, if you look at the section that he says he's interested in, food, service, education, B2B, you know, I think that, you know, that just translates exactly what he was saying from the first page there. You know, he's still casting a very broad net of what he's interested in. He really, you know, if you look at business location, it's based at, he don't care. He doesn't care what kind business environment important. Anybody, any client or type of customer is okay for him as well. All of these things are telling me it's about the money with this guy. It doesn't care. I'm looking for a strong ROI. Employee types, he doesn't care. Number of employees, none to few. Okay, so red flag for me personally, because if he's going to land another contract and he's going to focus in on semi-absentee businesses, you know, there's where we have, you know, maybe something that's a little bit tough, so I need to dig a little bit deeper with him. And as I dug deeper in the meeting with him, I found out that, you know, he was actually fine with up to about 20 employees, and he's used to managing somewhere between 20 and 30. So time frame for being in business, 3 to 6 months. You know, not uncommon for us to see that regularly. Time frame for deciding, 1 to 3 months. This guy's ready to move. And I think that's, you know, illustrated also by, you know, his 10 on a commitment scale as well. So him and the spouse are making decisions, so obviously she has to be in the client meeting when we go through things. Need for personal income, 1 year, tells me he's a patient guy. He has realistic expectations, more than likely, but still something to validate. And I usually do that towards the end of the meeting when we will start to, you know, almost reverse engineer the process. You know, if you're going out and you're going to get a retail business, it's going to, you know, may take 9 to 12 months to find a spot. Then you build it out. So it tells me he's probably got realistic expectations, but if we're going to end up in the retail space, I need to validate that with him. So move on to page 4. By the way, any questions so far?
Chris, okay. This is Jim Rhodes, Chris. I do have one question for you. So far, you had put down the things he listed as didn't care, wasn't important. But as a belonger emulator, don't you normally find them wanting something they can attach to? I mean, isn't it? Is just for the love of the money normally a driver for them?
And that's one thing I'm looking for. I'm looking for, you know, what is it? Because if this guy is a belonger, and I guess we can flip over to page 6 real quick. See, he's the belonger emulator. You know, those are the two that rose up pretty strong, but his achiever side is pretty strong as well. Now, I put a lot of faith in the PFA, and I trust it, but I go out and I verify it too. And as I walk through this, you know, if I would have to say that, you know, this guy was, and not looking, you just look at the guy's answers on the first few pages, and then if I had to guess what you know, page five on was in this, I probably would have said he's in Achiever Emulator, just based on, you know, my experience. He actually came in as the Belonger Emulator. So, yeah, it's something that you got to go out and, I think, validate, you know, trust but verify is the method I take with the assessment. And it's great at getting us started. So, yeah, I thought he would have to have something that he's a little bit more passionate about, but it, as it turned out, the thing he was passionate about is a strong return on investment. So does that help?
That does. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. That does.
Okay. So if we look on page four, I think we kind of covered this a little bit already, but there's a couple more items to draw out of this page, I think. As I mentioned, they didn't put some of their IRAs, which I think was probably about another $75,000, if I recall, and about another $60,000 or $80,000 in a 401k, which was the spouse's. Because he filled this out and he didn't have that information or have a password to access it while he was doing the PFA. So, you know, that obviously bumps up his net worth quite a bit. And, you know, it would make him a little bit more qualified for some of the concepts we work with if we were going to go down the route of a semi-absentee versus, you know, an owner-operator. Another thing that's important, and I don't know if you guys get this or not, but I have very few clients that will actually fill out the liquid capital and amount to finance section. So that's something I really try and drill down on. And my process is I will either have a nice long discussion with them, you know, make sure that they have an education, done one of our webinars, then I'll send them the PFA after really qualifying them. And then after the PFA, after I get it, I go through and I have some initial questions to ask them, and that's when I set the client meeting. So one of the things I always drill down on in that follow-up call prior to the face-to-face is, okay, you said that you were comfortable on page three, you know, $50,000 to $90,000. You know, tell me where we need to be because you know, we don't want to exceed a comfort level. And I try and dig into, you know, what the actual budget is and what maybe the emotional budget might be for them as well. So if I come to find out in that follow-up call, he said, hey, I'm liquid for up to $125,000. And I'm looking at his assets and I'm trying to figure out where that's coming from. Is that a home equity line of credit? You know, willing to almost completely liquidate the 401k or maybe tap into both that and the stocks and bonds. So I'll flat out ask them, where's that coming from? And is that a number that your wife is comfortable with as well? And he said, well, no, she's really not. She's really more comfortable $60,000 to $80,000. So I'll use the lower of the two or try and find something, you know, closer to that lower number. Because you don't want to really go and stretch it if you don't have the spousal support, no deal in my opinion. So the other thing that's really important in this section is, you know, the bottom part where it says, do you have any additional income sources? And he's a retired from the military, so he's got that pension coming in. He also has some disability through the VA. So they've got the ability, that's probably where the 1 year plus on income expectation comes from because they've already got income coming in, which is fantastic because I'd say 90% of our, or at least my clients, don't have that. So let's see here. Do you guys want to jump through a lot of the behavioral part, or do you have any questions right now? I think a lot of people are on mute too, so... So we'll jump through the behavioral part real quick, and then I'd like to, you know, maybe ask you guys if you have some ideas on what you would present to him as well, and then I'll kind of fill you in on you know, what this client bought. So page six, Belonger Emulator, and I actually get a lot of Belonger Emulators, and when I go back and look, it's, you know, the one of the common denominators is the two people that buy from me more than anybody are the belongers and the emulators, either, you know, having one of those as their primary. So some things that I just highlight and I touch on in this section in the value sets and motives. So customer satisfaction, long-term relationships, self-sufficient, a practical service business for this guy. They're really looking out for their family, trying to provide, you know, some basic basic security for their family. And then also down the very last sentence, extensive due diligence process, which with this client it was. He was very thorough, wanted to overanalyze at times. And, you know, whenever I see that, I'm just expecting, and I try to preframe that, you know, you're going to get to the edge of the cliff. You're going to have all the information that you can gather, but you won't have the playbook for the franchise and be able to make, a guaranteed expectations of what you're going to get out of the business financially. So I'll try and preframe that and let them know that they're going to have to, you know, gather all the information that they can, and it's not going to be enough, and they're going to have to make a leap of faith or walk away. So I get that a lot with the belongers and then even some of the societals that I work with. So I'm sure you guys have done a lot of these calls or maybe even listened to some recordings. So the values, the hierarchy of values, I don't take a whole lot of a different approach than most other Fran Netters that have done some of these calls. I'm just looking for some of the red flags. Obviously security, relationship, family is very important to this guy. He wants to provide. He's got two young kids. The emulator side of him says, hey, I want to step out. I want to be a little bit different, I think, leave my mark. So if you flip over to page 11.
Hey, Chris, I got a question for you before you move forward on this.
Sure.
I noticed that he's got a wild card of respect. How were you able to use that information in your client meeting to kind of pinpoint his pain and what did respect mean to him?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that out. I did ask him, and something I have highlighted on the PFA in the initial review. So whenever I get a one of those wild cards, you know, sometimes you get two or three of them. I just flat out ask them. I sit down and I say, you know, these things right here, you know, people will call them wild cards. Some people will call them the lost sheep. And sometimes it's, you know, something's going on, and I'm not sure. And I just ask them, tell me about it. So with this guy, sometimes the best thing you can do is just ask questions. In those client meetings, obviously that is the best thing we can do is let them tell us what's going on. So what Eric said here is he had had a situation fairly recently within his company that, you know, he had put together some information. It was the right solution for the contract that they were on. And they didn't take his information, and ended up it was a big mess for him, and in turn he got blamed. I think you can actually see that on some of the one of the situations or one of the answers that he had back on page 2 about a negative work experience. Something else that had played into this, or that kind of drawn out when I asked that question, I said, okay, so anything else? And that's something early on when I was doing some initial training with Howie Bassick, and Howie says one of the best questions that you can ask a client is anything else. And he said, yeah, there is something else. He said, given that I'm an African American and a lot of my family, they've never accomplished a whole lot. You know, they have the blue collar jobs, and no one in my family, immediate family, or even his friends. Were business owners. And he said I would like to have that title as being the first one in my family that has decided to make this leap of faith. So you can see that respect, sometimes those wild cards or lost sheep are sometimes the primary motivations to do what they're doing. So that's whenever I get those lost sheep, I just or wild cards. I just ask, what's going on? Do you have an idea of why this shows up? Sometimes they want to address it. Sometimes you got to draw it out of them. Other times they won't do it at all. They won't let you know what's going on. Maybe it's something that they're keeping their cards close to their vests or trying to bury down deep. So those things can come back and bite you if you don't at least ask the questions. So does that answer your question, Tracy?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. So I'm going to jump to page 11. Now, this is one of the sections that I do pay attention to, but I don't pay as much attention to as some of the other sections. The leadership style, paternalistic. I'm sure I probably should pay more attention to it. The compliance ratio. Now, I get clients all the time that will say, well, I'm only coming in at a 10 on a medium. I don't know about you guys, but I have very rarely seen anybody above a 14 of my clients that come in. For this guy, I'm looking at him saying, okay, well, he's pretty compliant type of an individual. We probably shouldn't try and throw ideas of a very young franchise at him that's fairly loosely structured. He's going to need something that's a little bit more structured. So that's one of the ways I will look at the compliance ratio also, not just how he's going to follow the system, but what does the system actually look like for him. So core competencies on page 12, some reiteration of what else other sections of the assessment. Passion for taking care of customers is going to be important as, the primary there with client relationship management, administration and management. All of these things are starting to add up for me as I'm going through this, and I'm trying to think about not just my horses, but also what other concepts are in our inventory that are going to be a good fit for this guy. And as I go through this, it's becoming more and more obvious to me that his job situation is going to be kind of the linchpin for whether we're going to be able to find an opportunity for him or not, or find the right one for him. Meta programs and strategies on page 13. For me personally, this is one of the coolest pages in the assessment. I love the way, that we get inside their heads and convey to them. The clients, I find that they actually eat this page up when you reflect it back to them in the client meeting. Balance guy, the emulator side of him, I'm telling him, listen, you're one of only 20% of the people that score this way, and that kind of makes them feel special, and they say, yeah, I am a little different. I like to hear that. External frame of reference. This is going to validate that, I know this guy's got an accountability partner within his the Black MBA organization that he's with. So if I can't even, get that guy to jump on a phone call with me, which I will do some, try and get advisors, or maybe even just set up a cup of coffee if they've got questions. If this is another person in the process possibly that, may be influencing his decision, so I need to make sure they're up to speed and participating in the due diligence if they're going to have a say. Task attitude, optional. So anytime there is an optional, which I get about, I'd say 70% of my clients are optional these days, and it seems like more and more are trending that way. I'm going to set that upfront contract with them and make it very apparent that they're probably going to find a business that's a very good fit for them and then say, what else? What else is out there? I'm an optional myself, and what I'll do is I will share an experience of how I found the right option for me, and then I went out and kept looking for more things. And sometimes I share the example of my wife was, she likes to exercise, and she was wanting a pair of earbuds that fit her very well and she could run with. So I found some on the internet. They were the first set that I found was the right price. They were perfect for her, what she wanted. I was going to buy them for her birthday. And I ended up an hour later still tooling around on the internet looking for other earbuds just in case I miss something. And I said, that's what optional people will do when they go and buy a business. They'll find all the data that they need to collect, analyze, and ready to make an educated decision, but go, what else? And that's what the optional people tend to do, or at least my clients will do, and I set that up in the meeting and let them know that when they do that, I'm going to let them know that they are being optional. So sometimes I find that that's very helpful when you get to that roadblock at the end of the process. Specific, you know, versus global, Eric here, he's going to be a specific guy, wants to have all the details. However, if you go back to one of the early on pages in the assessment, he said he's a big picture guy, so that's something I needed to dig a little bit deeper on. Again, just looking for little inconsistencies and things like that, because those are sometimes the most important things that are buried within the assessment, I think. Now, the last page of the assessment, business needs and best suited. I pay some attention to this page, but I don't try and let it influence. I come back to this after I've made my long list of selections, just to, more than anything, validate some things. But I found that sometimes when I lean real heavily on this page, I'll rule out ideas that may be a good fit. So what I do from here on out with this assessment is I flip it over to the back page, and I write some of the things that I think are most important here. First, he's a belonger emulator. Then I write down his sales and commitment, so he's a 3-3-10. But then I start to pull out some things that are real important. And what I pulled out of this assessment was, he's probably a semi-absentee guy. I validated that in a follow-up phone call. 50 to 100K investment, needs to replace $100,000, recognized franchise brand, low sales, he needs structure, and under 20 employees is going to be a focus. And then I go to our inventory. I'll look at my horses as I've got printed out, and I'll write those down first. And then what I'll actually do is I will actually look at these opportunities, and I score them with a tally mark. So I looked at all the different businesses and wrote down my horses, and I'll actually score the franchises as they meet the expectations that the client has. So I wrote down a handful of franchises. But maybe at this time, let's see what you guys would have presented to this guy.
Chris, this is Jim Rhodes.
Yes.
Initially, I'm thinking he'd be in line with Great Clips, Nine Round, or Always Best Care, Senior Services.
Okay.
Because of
anybody else?
Hi, this is Linda. I'd written down the ones that were just mentioned, but I also wrote down Minji's.
Okay.
And maybe My Salon Suite.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. So here's what I'll tell you I put on the table for this guy. I kind of had to do a little bit of a hybrid because our client meeting came about 2 weeks before he was actually going to get the decision on the contract position. So I wrote down Meineke. I wrote down Supercuts. I don't have Great Clips in my area. If you look, one of the things that wasn't on the assessment, or at least I don't think it was, he saw a popcorn concept down in Atlanta that he just thought was the greatest thing that he had ever seen. I think that was actually might have been the resale. Back then we had Doc Popcorn in our inventory. I thought about it, but then I put a line through it and scratched it out. I don't believe we had made a big push with Nine Round just yet back in 2012, but I did have Pro Martial Arts, and I think we had just started talking to Kosama at that time, so kind of a sister brand of Nine Round and Snap Fitness. Scratched out Kosama, but I also had Batteries Plus on there. Now, some of these are obviously owner-operator types. And another one that I had on there was CPR, and then another one called The Joint, which is a chiropractic franchise that I've got a regional or local agreement here with. So it's, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's a kind of a spinoff from the folks who created Massage Envy. So I had, you know, some very different options, and he ended up buying a Supercuts. And when you look at that, this is back when we were still kind of doing single deals with them a little bit more frequently. He just bought a single. He wanted to start off, but the guy came back around within a year and upgraded to a three-pack, which was fantastic. But ended up, like I said, Supercuts was a great option for him after he dug deep. That structure that they provide, not just in the due diligence process, but in the training and support, the recognized name, the fact that he's going out and, you know, he's not selling the business, he's doing much more marketing. So he's already opened up his first location here in St. Louis. He's close to a lease on his second location. He's been a fantastic validator for him and has actually referred over a good friend of his who bought a Menchie's three-pack as well, which the follow-up and making sure that the client gets some love after the sale is always important, and, you know, it was $40,000 worth of important for the Menchie's three-pack for me. So that's how I walked this guy through the prepping for my meeting and you know, the follow-up with him. I'm certainly open to any questions if you guys have any.
Chris, Jim Rhodes again. Question for you with respect to, and maybe I misunderstood the financials as you spoke about them before. You said he was willing to invest a certain level, but his wife was willing to only invest 60 to 90, I think it was.
Yeah.
And you were going to stick with the lower end, but you offered a Meineke, which is what, starting area 200?
But you know, financing options with them as well. You know, kind of like I look at a Supercuts in my area. Owners are opening up a Supercuts for, you know, closer to $175,000. A Meineke, you could, you know, we're getting closer to the $200,000. But there's, you know, such a, you know, they've got you know, loans that are available, and he would have qualified yet. I think they had high 700s for credit. They've got that that pension coming in that eases that. They would have been very good for a loan, which actually they did do a loan on, or they're doing a loan on their second location.
Okay.
But they utilized Brand Fund and tapped in their retirement funds for the initial Supercuts location.
Okay.
So what I found was that – go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. Now, I was going to say, you, because I – was just looking at it, so you showed horses that you knew were above and beyond the range they really wanted, but based on what they really wanted to do, to see if they'd reach for them?
Yeah, and that's what I'll do sometimes is I will show a concept. When I'm picking horses, I'll show a concept that, you know, may seem a little bit too big to chew. And here's what I find is that many times, if not all the time, that gives them, you know, they're thinking internally, well, that gives me permission to go and check out these other things. So sometimes I will throw in something that, you know, that might seem like a too big of a pill to swallow, just to get them moving. Some people would agree with that. Some people would probably disagree with that, but that's something that that was some advice that I had from Howie early on was, try to set them up so that they give themselves permission to get the process started, and from there you can kind of help manage some things.
Okay.
So
thank you.
When they are as far as how pitching the, I think Supercuts was the first concept in the lineup that I pitched to him as well. And a lot of times I will lead with the best one when they have an emulator component, because a lot of times they're very focused on image and things like that. And, you know, sometimes they're very visual as well. And they kind of keep that first one resonates the most with them. But I usually always show a big concept and a small deal too, so that they'll give themselves permissions to move forward sometime.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Okay.
Doesn't
no
sound
one
like
has
it.
Any
sounds
questions.
Like this is a we're yeah. recording.
Yeah, I know. Well, thanks, guys, for hanging in there through this technical difficulty issue. And thank you, Chris, for sharing today your time and experience with us. And everybody have a great weekend. I'll be posting this on FranConnect, so stay tuned for an email about that.
All right. Thanks, Tracy.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Tracy. Chris.